Hi, this is Robin Gao, the host of Queer Lehigh Valley, where we talk about all things queer in the Lehigh Valley, and I'm super excited today to be joined by Corinne Goodwin. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about a recent federal rule issued by the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare Services, which prohibits federal Medicaid and CHIP funds from covering pediatric gender-affirming care. So basically, that's for people under the age of 19. I think that it's caused a lot of anxiety in the community, and I couldn't think of anyone better to break down what impacts that might have and kind of understanding what that ruling means than you, Corinne. So do you want to give the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Corinne Goodwin. My pronouns are she and they. I'm the founder and executive director of Eastern Pennsylvania Trans Equity Project, very active in politics and advocacy around the state, and so very excited to be talking about this topic today.
I also forgot to mention my pronouns. I always do this with guests. They're the first one I forget. I use any pronouns, just so folks know. Before we jump into today's subject a little bit, how did you start doing work in the trans community?
Well, it probably helps being trans myself. So I've known that I was trans since I was 3 or 4 years old. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course, when you're little, you don't have language for that.
Mm, for
and,
sure.
Growing up in the 60s and the 70s, I always tell people, say, I know I look like I'm 35, but I'm really 67. You know, I didn't come out until I was in my late 40s, mm-hmm. frankly. So I was closeted for you know, 2/3 of my life so far. But when I started to come out, I got connected with a local support group for trans folks here called Lehigh Valley Renaissance, and eventually took over that group, and it's now expanded into the Trans Equity Project. So we cover 42 counties across the state of Pennsylvania with our programming and our services, but based here in the Lehigh Valley, which is kind of cool.
That's quite expanded from the initial group. I will say, too, that I also, Corinne is my boss. So just telling listeners that I work for Eastern PA, too. But we're talking about not necessarily just Equity Project stuff. We're talking about this specific topic today. So what is gender-affirming care, and what are some misconceptions that you encounter often about it? I bring up this question because I feel like even in the LGBTQ, well, not the T, the LGB community, people don't always understand what gender-affirming care encompasses. And so I think it's helpful for listeners to kind of understand, what does that mean? What does it not mean?
So I think that the key word there is care, mm-hmm. right? And so for many people of trans experience, care just looks like that, caring, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of trans people don't necessarily take advantage of medical mm-hmm. Treatments or even mental health treatments necessarily. They just want to be acknowledged for who they are and be able to move through the world as who they are and become great community members and go to work and, you know, buy their groceries and be part of their community and thrive, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it starts with just the idea of caring, period, mm-hmm. and caring about your neighbor. But for what most people think about, it involves, you know, medical care and mental health care. So it can start off strictly with just, you might go see a therapist because you know that, you know, as trans people, we're often stigmatized and you're trying mm-hmm. to figure out a way to deal with that. Other times, it does involve some form of medical treatment. So about 50% of trans people do pursue some form of medical transition. And so that can look like, in the case of younger folks, it can look at like puberty blockers, which are a way to pause puberty and, you know, all the physical changes that happen with that. After that, it could look like hormonal care. So for example, in my case, I take estrogen, right? And it helps to not only align my body with what my mind is, but it also helps my mind stop struggling mm-hmm. with who I am. And then, of course, there's surgical care as well. But actually, relatively few people get surgical interventions.
Yeah, I usually try to explain that to people because I think that there's been a lot of misinformation around like trans youth accessing like gender-affirming surgery specifically. And I forget the number off the top of my head, but it was in the single digits of like people I think even in the country, because I think that typically a lot of those procedures are maybe meant for people who have been able to go through like an initial puberty, or like they're not typically made for someone who's under 18. I definitely have encountered a few people who've accessed that, but it's pretty rare. And I feel like I do a lot of work with trans folks, so I feel like I would have encountered more people if it were as widespread as people maybe talk about it being.
Yeah, yeah. So there is a study that was released, and I don't have it in front of me, so don't hold me to these hard numbers, but I'll be in the approximation. So, you know, around 1% to 2% of people born in the country are people of gender diverse background, right? So they could be intersex, they could be trans. There are 79 million people under the age of 18 in this country. So that would, you know, extrapolate out to about 7 million people. If I'm doing my math right, people of trans experience in the country. And there was a study done that they looked at every single insurance claim in the nation over a four-year period. And they found that out of that 7 million young people, that 4,000 had gotten some form of medical treatment. And 700 out of 78 million had gotten some sort of surgical intervention, and all but 8 of those were for top surgery. 98% of all top surgeries are done for cisgender youth, either for typically for a breast reduction, because if you're, you know, a cisgender male and you get breast development, which happens relatively frequently, you know, you may want that reduced.
Yeah, for sure. And you bring up a good point with that, too, that gender-affirming care is definitely usually referring to care for trans, non-binary, gender-expansive people, but cisgender people also access forms of, like, gender-affirming care. I usually use the example of, like, I have a lot of friends or folks who are cisgender women who might grow, like, facial hair, and they access the same procedure as a lot of trans women access, or trans femme people. They call it laser hair removal or stuff like that. And that's to make them feel comfortable in their bodies too. And I think that when we think about that, like, all of us are just trying to make a home in the the body that we have, you know?
Well, and just look at the commercials on TV for testosterone enhancement.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And, you know, so gender-affirming care is for everybody. I mean, if you're a person going through menopause, doctors, you know, will give out, you know, estrogen and, you know, testosterone, like their Tic Tacs, you know, for cisgender folks. So, you know, gender-affirming care is for everybody.
Yeah, there's a phenomenon of, they're called like men's care centers. There's a few in the Lehigh Valley where people, mostly made for cisgender men, to get like the testosterone prescriptions and stuff. And I had some trans friends who were like, I should try to go and see how it works out. And I was like, stick to your, primary care provider. That sounds good.
I think I think the thing really is though, you know, medical care for people under the age of 18 is incredibly rare. And it's also important to talk about that there is a huge amount of gatekeeping, right?
Yeah,
and
for
so
sure.
And this is why this insurance data is so reliable, right? So I know as an adult, for me to get gender-affirming care, you know, I had to get a letter from a therapist after I saw them for 2 years. You know, I had to, you know, get approval from my insurance company. I had to have my medical doctor, you know, appeal that care. It took like a year, right? And for youth, they're even more, more gatekeeping. So it's not like you can just walk in and say, give me hormones. There's a lot of gatekeeping. It's very hard to get.
Definitely not. Talking a little bit more about this ruling, so what does this rule do slash not do, so people can maybe understand some of the impacts of it?
I think it's important to put this, you know, in the context, the broader context of what's going on with anti-trans legislation, and more broadly anti-LGBTQ legislation, because there's plenty of that. And other actions that are being taken, you know, by state governments, local governments, and in particular the Trump administration. And so the Trump administration, because it's good politics, in all honesty, it activates their base, has been really leaning on the anti-trans button a lot. And they've been deploying a number of tactics, right? So that starts with just outright intimidation. So, you know, the first day that he was in office, he issued executive orders saying, you know, that they wanted to investigate hospitals and other healthcare providers, and they're trying to intimidate people into not providing care. Mm-hmm. And they have been somewhat successful in that. So in Pennsylvania, there's three major healthcare networks that provide the majority of healthcare for trans youth, and two of them have stopped providing care. That happened back in June of this past year, May of this last year. So they're trying to do these intimidation tactics. They have been threatening funding for healthcare. They try to say, for example, to all health networks nationally, and we were lucky enough that we were able to stop this action through the work of a lot of good people, but where they were going to say that if any hospital provided affirming care to anybody under the age of 19, they would withhold every dollar of Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement from these hospitals.
Yeah.
Well, our local hospitals here, they get well in excess of their 50% of their revenue from Medicaid and Medicare. They would go out of business.
Yeah.
And so some of these hospitals that did in fact stop providing care, you know, their reasoning is like, well, either we stop providing care or we stop serving people who have heart attacks.
Yeah.
And so you can understand why they were kind of making these decisions a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we were able to stop that. Mm-hmm. So us and other organizations tried to activate people. We sent in over 38,000 comments into the federal government. And just a few weeks ago, the Trump administration announced that they were not going to enforce that rule. They were abandoning it, right? So our action works. This particular case, though, they have issued what's called a federal rule, which talks about how the federal government is going to administer the law. And what this rule says is that the federal government will not reimburse healthcare providers for the federal share of Medicaid or CHIP funding for gender-affirming care for people under the age of 19. So that's a very low number of people. That's the first thing. It impacts very few people globally. But if you're that person who's getting that care, obviously the impact is huge.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's not a ban on healthcare, right? It's a ban on federal funding for healthcare. So what that means is that if I was the parent of a 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid, my kid can still get trans-affirming healthcare. I may have to pay for it out of pocket, or I may need to seek out a different way of paying for it. Additionally, the way that CHIP and Medicare are paid, so if I'm the doctor and I'm billing you know, Medicaid for this or CHIP for this, is I actually send my bill to the state. It's administered by the state of Pennsylvania. The state pays half, and then the state bills the federal government for half. The state could choose to pay for the whole thing, right? And so that's one of the things that us and other organizations and advocates are trying to, you know, encourage the state to look at. If this rule was to go into effect, that would the state make up that whole piece? In total for the entire state, it's $3 million.
Yeah.
It's not that big a number in
the
overall
grand scheme of
the
budget.
Of the state budget. But they have to figure out the mechanism for making that happen. The other thing that is happening is that there are organizations that are already in the process of building lawsuits where they're going to sue the federal government and federal court. Potentially some states are going to do that as well. You know, Governor Shapiro has sued the government on these issues several times already. So we don't know whether or not the governor is going to join those lawsuits, but they, but he could. And the goal will be to first get a stay of this rule so that it doesn't go into effect, and then potentially to have it blocked outright. So I think the message is, don't panic. Don't panic. Additionally, even if the rule was to go into effect, for people who are currently getting care, there's a six-month runway where you'll be able to continue to get care paid for by CHIP or Medicaid for a period of six months. And that gives you time to make your other plan.
Yeah.
So we have had at the TransEquity Project over the last 2 weeks, I think we're now up to a good half a dozen or more parents who've reached out to us, frankly, in a state of panic because they're worried about their kids. And we're able to connect them with potential alternatives to, you know, explain what the rule does or doesn't do. So I guess the key message is don't panic. Make a plan. And there are organizations like ours or other ones who will help you make that plan
for sure,
that you can continue to get the care that your kids need.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining all that. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to dive a little bit into how communities have been responding to this ruling and how people might think about finding resources for whatever kind of support they need as a trans young person. I'm Robin Gao, our host, and I'll see you in a sec.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Robin with Queer Lehigh Valley here with our guest, Corinne Goodwin. And we're talking a little bit more about a recent ruling impacting Medicare and Medicaid for folks under the age of 19. Continuing with our conversation, so if there are listeners who are impacted by this rule, how might they go about looking for resources to find support for whatever they're trying to figure out after this rule goes into effect, if it does, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's a, so I want to reinforce, if it goes into effect, that's a really important piece. And that, again, people have that kind of time to make their plan. So I think that if you think that you may be affected by this, the first step of your plan is to have a heart-to-heart conversation with your kid's medical provider. So make an appointment for a face-to-face conversation. I don't think that it's wise to do this over email or through the
portal.
I would have a face-to-face conversation with my medical provider and say, hey, doc, you know, this is potentially on the horizon. You know, how can you help me? And there's probably a number of things that that doctor could do to try to try to help. The next thing probably is to get connected with networks of advocates and organizations that help, you know, folks. That could include the TransEquity Project, right? You can find us at patransequity.org. You can go to our website, for example, and download a full list of healthcare providers that provide this type of care. And then we have additional information that we can, you know, share on the phone or via email with parents. We have two different community groups specifically for parents and family members of trans folks. So it's a great way to connect and find out what other people are doing. And then there's another, and I'll just give a shameless plug. So there's a group called Trans Parents of Southeast Pennsylvania. And the woman who runs that, her name is Julie, and she's a saint. So connect with these groups, and they will tell you how to do it. And then the other thing I'll just say is that I have the benefit of being, you know, an old lady. I remember what it was like in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And it may not feel like it if you're not used to this, but things are still better now than they were then. We were able to survive back then, and we always have found a way, and we're going to continue to find a way. And the way that we do that is we take care of each other. So get connected with organizations like ours, or Trans Parents of Southeast PA, or other community groups, or LGBTQ centers, so you can network, have a really good conversation, an honest conversation face-to-face with your healthcare provider, and we'll figure out a way to get you help.
Yeah, for sure. I always remind people of that, of like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are already people who are doing that work and have been thinking about it, and the networks definitely exist. So moving a little bit away from just like more traditional healthcare, I think that people also are not always super aware of what kinds of resources in general exist for trans youth across our region. What does the landscape of care look like right now for trans youth in terms of like support programs and stuff like that? We've been talking about healthcare, but we are whole people. We need usually a little bit more than just seeing a doctor.
Yeah, so it is so important to get off of your screen and out into the real world, mm-hmm. I will say. So whether it's our organization or, you know, the Bradbury Sullivan Center, they have youth hangout time 3 days a week, you know, where young folks can go, you know, or other organizations that just, you know, are safe spaces mm-hmm. to gather and to learn from each other and mm-hmm. just, you know, get out and have a little bit of fun. You know, we have a great program. It's not medically related at all, but for trans youth, mm-hmm. I mean, littles, like under the age of 13, and I'll just say that you run that, Robin, but, you know, where they just go out and, like, mm-hmm. you know, we rent a trampoline park for a day, or we'll go for nature walks, or mm-hmm. I think the next one is we're going to the Lehigh Valley Zoo and, you know, or nature preserve and playing with lemurs. So, you know, it's just a great way to get out there and network in a casual and fun environment. That's mm-hmm. really important.
Yeah, when I help coordinate that group, I always think about all the misconceptions about, like, trans, and we call them, like, gender creative kids, because, like, some kids are just exploring, and we don't feel as an organization that you have to, like, have a label when you're four, you know, like they just want to explore a lot of times, or just be in an affirming environment where they know that they won't be judged for the ways that they are exploring gender as a young person.
And I think also what I really love about these social activities that we do for young folks, old folks, and everything mm-hmm. in between, but in particular around these youth programs, is it's a great way for parents to connect.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? And learn to support each other. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to feel isolated, especially in the current environment. I know that, you know, in our, you know, kind of more traditional community groups that we have here in the Lehigh Valley, it's not atypical for us to get 40 or 50 people all together. And just knowing that there are other people out there like mm-hmm. you is huge.
Yeah. For sure. And the other thing that I feel like is a misconception about the groups is that the kids don't really talk about being trans, which is really interesting. Because I think that people assume that we are, like, I don't know, telling them about being trans or something. Yeah. I just remember, like, one of my favorite moments is this one boy was always mad that most of the people who are coming were genderqueer or trans femme people. And he was like, there's never any boys to play with. And another trans boy came and they just played the whole time. And then, like, I give them their own space. But I heard the one ask the other kid, like, are you trans? He's like, yeah, that's why I'm here, duh. And it was really sweet.
Meanwhile, they're just playing video games.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. They just were hanging out.
Yeah. I think so I'm going to switch gears here for mm-hmm. just a second, too.
Sure.
So I think that the other thing I want to kind of talk about here, some of the power of these groups, whether they're for youth or adults or for parents or spouses, mm-hmm. is that it's a not just that way to bond socially, but it's also a way to activate.
Yeah,
right?
I agree for sure.
And so I think it's really important that people know that whether it's around this rule that mm-hmm. we're specifically talking about today or other issues, that there are lots and lots of really good people working mm-hmm. on your behalf, mm-hmm. right? So whether that's our organization, you know, working to pass countywide non-discrimination ordinance here in Northampton County, mm-hmm. or work that we're doing at the state capitol, or, you know, Lambda Legal or GLAAD Law, mm-hmm. you know, submitting lawsuit after lawsuit to protect, you know, our rights against what's going on these days. There are so many good people mm-hmm. doing this, what is often hard work. Mm-hmm. And if you can support them in any way, please do.
Yeah. I mean, that was my next thought is, like, if people are hearing this and they're like, I don't like that. How could I advocate for this to be different? What are some, like, potential avenues that people can engage in either local or larger government?
Yeah, so the first thing I'm going to say is vote.
Yeah.
Right? So we have an election coming up, and it's really important. And it's important not just at the federal level. It's important at the state and the mm-hmm. local level. I have two lists in front of me right now, for example. So a lot of people talk about the anti-LGBTQ, anti-transgender legislation mm-hmm. that's out there. But currently sitting in the Pennsylvania Capitol, there are 53 53 pro-LGBTQ pieces of legislation, and they cover everything from marriage equality mm-hmm. to protecting the rights of parents and caregivers to shield them from mm-hmm. federal prosecution and investigation and you name it. Those bills are not moving because we have a Republican Senate and a Democratic House, and they're not getting their stuff together. It's a stalemate. What would happen if, you know, we were able to elect just a few more leaders, you know, in the state legislature, and then all of this positive legislation passed, mm-hmm. right? Elections matter, mm-hmm. right? Other things you can do, you know, and I mentioned that, you know, there was another anti-trans health rule that the Trump administration mm-hmm. had tried to put out, and then they backed off on it. Mm-hmm. They backed off on it because 38,000 Americans wrote in comments on this rule and said, don't do this. Mm-hmm. You know, we helped coordinate like 500 of those comments, our organization. Make sure that you're aware of these things. Follow the social media of organizations mm-hmm. like ours, you know, so we can say, here's a legislative alert or a rule mm-hmm. alert, and, you know, you can act on this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I think that, you know, beyond, you know, kind of the political stuff, I mm-hmm. guess, you know, the voting and the mm-hmm. you know, subscribing to legislative alerts and things like that is just reach out your hand to your neighbor. Mm-hmm. I live in a neighborhood where, like, nobody talks to their neighbors.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Right? You know, and, like, you know, you're lucky if you get the wave while somebody's driving down the street. And we have these wonderful folks that live next door to us who, you know, they are people of Muslim faith, mm-hmm. and no one talks to them. And their kid is, like, the most amazing young girl, right? You know, and she, like, you know, comes over our house, and she gives us, like little painted rocks and stuff like that. And, you know, and we talk to them. And, like, in our neighbors across the street, they just had a new grandbaby, and, like, mm-hmm. grandpa's so proud of this mm-hmm. baby, right? You know, just take that 5 minutes and show someone else that you care, mm-hmm. right? And they might be a trans person, and you may not even know it. Mm-hmm. I found out that in my neighborhood, I have now four other trans people living in my neighborhood, and I never knew it until, like, there was an accident, that literally an accident that happened, and they, you know, and I backed into somebody, and they go, like, oh, I'm a trans person.
Oh.
They go, like, oh, hey.
What a way to find out.
Oh, hey, you're Corinne. You know, mm-hmm. and I go, like, oh, now you know where I live. But, I mean, but, mm-hmm. you know, just reach out to your neighbors mm-hmm. and then let them know that we just want to go to the grocery store and buy our broccoli, too.
Yeah, I think sometimes it can be also helpful for breaking, if you are a trans person. I know for myself, I think it's helped break down some of the, like, stereotypes and stuff, because I think people don't know that they know trans people, or they don't know any trans people. And I think that when you know someone closer, I do think it is, I mean, there's layers to this, but I do think that it helps people understand that there's not, like, one experience for any marginalized community. Like, there are trans people who do every possible profession. Like, we don't have, like, I always tell people, like, there's no trans council deciding what all trans people think and believe. And, you know.
Well, I tell people, it's like, when I go to the grocery store to buy my groceries, mm-hmm. I try to go to a different checkout. I don't use the self-checkout.
Oh, okay.
If I can avoid it, I actually, like, go to the person mm-hmm. checking out, because, number one, I want to support labor. Mm-hmm. But also, like, and I try to go to a different one every week. Mm-hmm. I just want them to know that my money is as green as anybody else's.
That's so fair.
Right?
So we're coming to the end of our time. So what's something that's motivating your work lately?
Oh, gosh.
I know. It's a big question, but I thought it might be a, I don't know, positive way to end
layered conversation. I think that when I see somebody come into one of our community groups, or, you know, we're recording this just a couple days before Lehigh Valley Pride, mm-hmm. and I see somebody come into one of our groups, or I meet somebody at Pride, and you see them start to just blossom into mm-hmm. who they really are and gain confidence. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I have somebody walk up to me and they just say, thank you, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, thank you for helping me with my legal name change. This mm-hmm. is a common one, right? Or, you know, a mom, you know, coming up and saying, like, you know, I want to thank you because, you know, my kid is so much happier now mm-hmm. than they were, you know, a couple of years ago. And by the way, and, you know, their kid might be 40. So everybody still thinks that their kid's a kid.
Yeah.
When they're a mature adult. But I think that, you know, when we see that relief that someone gets, mm-hmm. or the confidence someone gets, or the gratitude that someone has for being able to access mm-hmm. programming, that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I think that's a great place to leave. Thank you for helping us break down this ruling and everything. So I've been your host, Robin Gao. This is Queerly High Valley, and I've been talking here today with Corinne Goodwin. Catch you next time on our next episode.